My name is Ty Bennett. You're listening to the Relevant Leadership Podcast, my podcast where I get to share superstar stories, leadership lessons, and influencer interviews. Today's superstar story is Sandra Joseph. I'm excited for you to hear Sandra's story. You just heard Sandra sing, and so you probably understand that she's connected to Phantom of the Opera. Sandra actually played the role of Christine Daae, the leading role, on Broadway for more than 10 years, almost 1,500 performances. She has the distinct honor of being the longest-running leading lady in the longest-running Broadway show of all time. If you're not familiar with Phantom of the Opera, I highly recommend that you see it, that you become familiar with the music. It's iconic. It's truly spectacular. And Sandra's story lives up to that bill as well. She is a really incredible individual. Beyond the story that you're going to hear, beyond her experience in Phantom, she's been featured on The Oprah Winfrey Show. She's been on CNN, on The Today Show, on The View, all over the place. She is an author. Her book, Unmasking What Matters, actually came out earlier this year on the 30th anniversary of Phantom of the Opera, and it launched to a number one international bestseller status, where she shares 10 life lessons that she learned from 10 years on Broadway. She currently gets to travel the world and share her story and share her talents on stage at different corporate events, and that's actually where we cross paths. You'll hear at the end of this, Sandra actually tells the story of how she and I met. This is a live interview. I am on the advisory board for a nonprofit here in Utah called WOW, which stands for Women of Worth. And I brought Sandra in to be part of an event that we were hosting, and I interviewed her on stage. And so you're going to hear the audience in the background. You'll hear laughter. You'll hear clapping. You might hear the occasional dinner plate being moved or fork dinging against a glass or something. And so you'll get a live look into this interview, but Sandra has a truly spectacular story. She is a superstar in all realms, and I'm excited for you to hear it. So, ladies and gentlemen, Sandra Joseph.
Thank you.
Hey. Have a seat.
Hi.
Sandra, you look amazing.
Thank you
so much for being here. We're going to get a chance for you and I to talk a little bit and to share your story and to get to know you a little bit. And then I'm going to get out of the way so you can sing, because I can't contribute in any way to that part of the evening. To be in such a role that everyone knows, right? I mean, Christine and Phantom, it's a role that everybody sees. Such a cool thing. But where did that start for you? Where did that bug come to say, I want to be on Broadway?
I guess it really started when I was very young. I was probably about 8 years old when my family took a trip to see the musical Annie. And I was, you know, the same age, and that you loved Annie too. Yes, yes. I remember sitting there, you know, in the Fisher Theater in Detroit. It was the national tour that had come through my hometown, and sitting there with my mom and dad, my sister, and the minute I saw that little girl up there in the red dress, I was just, it was like being struck by lightning. Like everything in my body said, I want to do that. Whatever she's doing up there, I want to be a part of it. But I was not the kind of kid who was comfortable in the spotlight at all. I was shy and introverted, and, you know, more comfortable with books, and, you know, I immediately felt like the battle was on between what I felt inside, like I wanted to do so badly, and believing that I would never be able to do it.
Interesting. So when did you start to share that with people? Or who did you share it with first?
First, the stuffed animals on my bed in my bedroom. They were my first audience. You know, I started singing along with the radio, trying to match, I'm going to age myself here, but Olivia Newton-John. Yes. And actually, it was only a couple of years later that I gathered up my courage and auditioned for a solo in my fifth grade Christmas concert. So that was my first big break in show business. It was a three-line solo in the Christmas concert. So the night of the big show, I'm standing outside the gym, you know, lined up with all of my classmates. We're about to go in and do the show. And I happened to take a look inside the door, and I saw the crowd. And all of a sudden, that fearful, shy kid inside just took over. And I ran over to my music teacher, Mrs. Maders, and I said, I can't do it. Please, please get somebody else to help me. I can't. And God bless her, she was very sweet. And the concert was about to start. So she said, okay, Sandy, go back to your place. I'll take care of it. And she gave the solo to another kid in my class. So my first big moment on stage, I chickened out at the last minute. But it actually was a really big lesson that I got at a really young age. Because I remember standing there on the risers, and when the moment for my solo came, I watched this classmate of mine go down there and sing that solo. And I stood back there feeling all of the feelings I was afraid I might feel if I got out there and failed. I felt like a failure for not having the courage to try. I felt embarrassed and humiliated. And I think even at that young age, something clicked inside my head and said, I don't ever want to feel that way again. So no matter how terrified I might feel, I'm going to find a way to find my courage and get out there and express what's inside me.
What a cool lesson. I mean, you think about, I think a lot of us have experienced things where we've quit, but maybe not to be able to see it and go, that's what I missed. You know, that's what I didn't take advantage of.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. So after that, then you pursued theater. Were you involved in theater in high school? I mean, how did that go?
You know, so many kids around here, probably some of you have children who are involved with the arts. Or Utah is huge in the arts community, and so many talented people here. But I didn't get started as a kid, really. I didn't do my first show until high school, which is late for kids nowadays. And my first role, actually, was my junior year in high school. I got to play Annie. A little long in the tooth for the part. You know, she's supposed to be 10 or something. I was 16. But that was it. So that I started doing shows in high school and continued performing in college. But I did not major in music or theater, really, again, because of fear. I was just afraid to admit that I wanted to try to make a living doing it. I mean, I knew what the odds were of actually being able to make a living as a performer. So I studied really hard. I started taking voice lessons at 16 and continued taking private lessons and acting classes throughout college. But I got a communications degree and really had no idea what I was going to do with it.
Most people don't if you have a communications degree, right? I mean, that's kind of how it is, yeah.
But you know, I when I was graduating from Michigan State, I sat down with my parents to talk about what I was going to do next. And it really was my father who was so, I think about this now, of how much courage it took for him to encourage me the way he did. He just was always very keyed into where I was, you know, and he knew my heart. And he said, if you don't at least try, you're always going to wonder what might have been. So he came up with a plan. He said, what if you give yourself a time limit? Go to New York, audition, try out for everything, and give it 5 years. If in 5 years' time nothing has happened, you can always come back home and figure out plan B.
You know, I think, I'm just thinking about these women that we're here to celebrate, and you know, you have somebody like your father who believed in you maybe when you didn't.
Yeah.
And who encouraged you when you couldn't find that courage within you. That's what tonight is, right? That's what this is all of us are here to encourage each of you and to show you the potential you have, to help you see it, because sometimes each of us need that, right?
Absolutely.
And to have a father that sees that, that's really incredible. I'm just, you know, as a father of four kids, I think, you know, that's the role, right? So your father encourages you, you go to New York, you probably had a ton of savings and you were set up perfect to be able to be there. So how did it work in New York?
Oh, well, I had my graduation money in my pocket and my big five-year plan, and within 5 weeks I was broke. And truly, I worked every temp job I could get. I didn't have computer skills, so I was like answering phones at a social work office. I worked in the mailroom at the Bank of Tokyo. Anything I could do to make ends meet. But it cut to year 4.5. I'm living on a friend's sofa. And, you know, those were the ramen noodle days of like, it's not looking good. I had been rejected all over New York. I'd gotten a couple little things, you know, singing and dancing on a cruise ship. You've seen those cruise ship shows, some of you. And a couple of little regional theater things outside of New York. But I just wasn't landing the big.
You hadn't hit Broadway yet, right?
No, not. It seemed like the writing was on the wall. It was not going to happen. And I couldn't support myself anymore. So at the 4.5 year mark, I was ready to call it quits and move back home. And that's when I got the opportunity of a lifetime. My agent called and said, I have an audition for you for Christine in The Phantom of the Opera.
So not doing Broadway, I mean, that's like the role of all roles that you could ever have, right? I know we've talked before and people had told you that you would probably be good for that, right? That you were a fit. You look like Christine. You were soprano like Christine. Yeah. So you go to the audition and you get the role?
Well, I went to the audition and all of a sudden, you know, maybe some of you can relate to this, where you think all is lost, and then all of a sudden you're standing on the cusp of like the biggest opportunity of your life. So there I am, all of a sudden standing on a Broadway stage. I couldn't even believe where I was. Like I would have paid money just to be able to go back there and look around, you know. And I'm on the stage of the Majestic Theater in the heart of Times Square, underneath that famous giant chandelier. Hal Prince, the director, who's like the Steven Spielberg of Broadway, he's sitting right there, surrounded by the whole creative team from the show. And little scared kid from Michigan is standing on that Broadway stage. So the pianist started to play the song I had been given, and I had practiced really hard, you know, and I began to sing. And as soon as I started, my mouth went so dry that my upper lip got stuck to my teeth. So I was like a kid making a monkey face, like, ah! That's what it was like. Somehow the song came out, but I was like frozen from the neck down, you know, like standing there singing like this, trembling. And I hit the high note at the end, and I finished the song and left the stage, and I don't remember any of it. Like, it was like, was I even there? Completely out of body. It was not the kind of audition that gets you a starring role on Broadway. So they called me afterwards, my agent, and said, you didn't get the part, but they gave me a job several rungs down the Phantom ladder. I was not the starring role on Broadway, but they put me in the chorus on the national tour. So, by the way, by applause, how many of you have seen The Phantom of the Opera? Yay! Okay, great, great. Okay. So most of you will remember this part. For those of you who haven't seen it, so there's that part in the show where the Phantom takes Christine in a boat, remember? And they descend to his underground lair beneath the opera house, and he sings this beautiful song, Music of the Night. Well, at one point during that song, the Phantom rips off this big black cloth to reveal a mirror image of Christine, life-size in a giant frame, and she's wearing a wedding gown. She's called the Mirror Bride, and it's a mannequin dressed as a bride. And her job is, on the big music cue, she bursts through the mirror like this. Ka-kong. And this scares Christine, and Christine faints. So let me show you that again. This was the mannequin's big dramatic moment. Ka-kong. That was my part. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. So years of studying, singing, acting, and dancing, and you get to play the dummy. But I was thrilled to have a job, thrilled to be a part of the show. So I did that for an entire year, 8 times a week. I was the dummy.
And that was the only role.
I was also in the crowd scenes, like the person way back there, you know, the masquerade scene, the masquerade stairs, I was way up on the stairs, no one could see me, you know.
So this was on the national tour, you're touring with it. So obviously we know you played Christine. So how do you go from being the dummy to being the actual lead in the play?
So after a year on the tour being the dummy, the Christine, the actress who was playing the leading role on our national tour, actually got another show. So she was leaving and the role was opening up. So they flew me back to New York from the tour to audition for the second time. So the second time, there I am again on the stage at the Majestic Theater under the famous giant chandelier, Hal Prince and the creative team sitting right there, me all alone on the stage. No way was I going to freeze this time. I put Vaseline on my upper teeth and gums so my lip could not get stuck. Oh yes, I did, it works. And I was not gonna freeze this time, so I decided I should show them that I can move. So I gave them big arm gestures and choreographed steps and dramatic movements. And when I finished the audition, the assistant director pulled me aside and said, "What on earth was that?" So I blew it again. Back I went. Yeah, and I was devastated.
So I'm just interested, in that process, obviously the dummy wasn't the end all be all, right? That's not where you wanted to be.
No.
Did you think about quitting?
I felt very discouraged by the end of that period, yeah. I definitely thought, well, I've hit the glass ceiling here. This is as far as I'm ever gonna get, especially after I blew the second audition. I don't know if you've ever had that experience where, you know, you've got this huge opportunity with so much riding on it and you get in your own way. Like, I knew better. I know that what they teach you in acting 101 is that you must be believable and authentic so that an audience connects with you. So that's what we're always looking for from each other, is that ring of truth. And if they don't see the truth in your eyes, then they're not going to trust you with the role. So I went back to the chorus and felt like, this is it. I'm never going to get this part.
So somehow you got a third chance. How did that come about?
Oh, it was crazy. So there I am, like, grieving and beating myself up and really not enjoying doing the show anymore because I just walked in feeling so discouraged and mad at myself. But I realized, you know, I've got to shift this. I have to turn this around. And again, it was my dad on the phone from Michigan. My dad sort of gave me a little tough love talk. He's like, "Do you remember a year ago when you were in the mailroom at the Bank of Tokyo? Like, look what you get to do every night. You get to be a part of this production that makes people happy and, you get to sing and act, and it may not be the be-all, end-all dream role, but you still get to do something that you have a lot to be grateful for. Yeah. So I started really focusing on all the things I had to be grateful for and writing them in my journal every night. And it's something I still do to this day. Every night and every morning, I write, what am I grateful for today? And I remember I wrote a thank you letter to the assistant director who had sort of told me the truth that I blew it. But I said, you know what? If this is as far as I ever get, I've already seen enough dreams come true to last a lifetime. Because I felt that way at that point. Like, this is pretty great. I never thought I'd be able to sing in public. I was a shy, insecure kid, and I get to be a part of this show. The day after I gave that letter, that thank you letter, and sort of released it, my agent called. He said, they still haven't found a Christine, and they want to bring you back and give you one last chance. Third audition. On the stage of the Majestic Theater, underneath the famous giant chandelier, Hal Prince, the creative team, sitting right there, and me all alone on that big stage. And, you know, I still really wanted to get the part, of course, but I didn't walk in with that same clinging, grasping energy. I had surrendered it, you know? I had let go of the neediness around it. And I said, if this is meant to be, let it be. And if it's not meant to be mine, then God bless whoever it's gonna go to. And I tried to bring that energy into the whole experience. And I really just said, okay, I'm gonna focus on just one thing. I said, may I be present? Because that's what I wasn't the other times. I wasn't really there. And that's what I think we all, that's our challenge, right? In these busy, crazy, distracted times that we live in, to really be here now and be present in the moment is a real challenge. So that was my focus. May I be present, and in that, may I be authentic, and may I trust that that is enough. And I think that is enough for all of us.
That's such a key point.
All the time. Yeah.
I think for everybody here, I mean, just the way you said that, I think we all need to realize that we are enough, right? And
yeah.
And when we show up as our best selves and we give that. So the audition, how'd it go?
I sang the song simply and honestly, and it wasn't even the most vocally perfect time that I did it, but I was coming from my heart, and they called me the next day and said, the role is yours.
Wow.
Thank you.
So you played Phantom, you were on the national tour for a period of time, and then they took you to Broadway.
Yeah.
How long were you on the national tour?
I traveled around the country for 2 years playing Christine after the year of being the dummy.
And then you went to Broadway for more than 10 years.
That's something like that. I lost count after a while, but they tell
me
it was well over 1,000 shows.
More than anybody's ever done, so we'll take it from there. Somewhere along the way, you had an interesting experience in the show with the Phantom, didn't you? With the actual Phantom?
Oh, well, yeah, actually. When the show played the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., the actor playing the Phantom left, and we got a new Phantom. And the actor who came in to replace him, he and I had really good chemistry on stage and off stage. And he is my husband of 13 years. Thanks. I married the Phantom.
So, one of my...
He's not here, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He's not here tonight.
He's going to come out from behind the stage.
Yeah,
that would be fantastic.
From a chandelier.
One of my favorite parts of your story, because it was a question I had. You know, I think about everything that we do, And we all have a role that we play, whether that's in our job or, you know, whatever we do. I think about, you know, my wife who stays at home with our four kids, and every one of us, we have something that we show up every day to do, and there's times that it's hard to show up. And the first time I heard your story, I heard you speak, I thought, how do you do that performance every night? I mean, the same performance, and show up and put yourself out there in a way that the audience just feels it, and that you, I mean, you're on Broadway. This is the best of the best, right? And I would think at some point it would get tiring and mundane and, you know, hard to really show up at that level. And you shared kind of an experience that you had with that. I think it's one of the coolest things that I love that you experienced. So talk to us about how you got through that.
Well, it's very true that after singing the same songs and playing the same scenes night after night for more than 1,000 shows in a row, it gets to be really challenging to show up with that same kind of energy. And it's your job to make the audience believe that this is all happening for the very first time. And when I was in about my 8th year of doing the show, I was really starting to feel that burnout. And I was talking to a good friend of mine about it, and he said, we were on the phone, he said, let's meet for coffee next week. I said, okay. The following week, I'm sitting across from him in this cute coffee shop in New York, and he handed me one of the most precious gifts I've ever received. It was a purple box. And on top of the box, he had stenciled the word perspective. Inside the box were clippings he had scoured the internet to find from people all over the world talking about what seeing Phantom of the Opera meant to them. And I sat there reading these stories and just crying into my cappuccino as, you know, a father who had saved up for a year to take his kids on a trip to New York to see the show, and how he would never forget the look in his daughter's eyes as he watched her watching the show, and a woman who took her mother to see Phantom before her mom passed away, and she said she will forever cherish that memory, and how every time she hears those songs, her mom is right there with her. And it made me realize that, you know, it's easy to forget in the midst of our day-to-day that what we do makes a difference to someone. So having that little perspective box was so motivating. And now I keep a perspective folder on my computer. And whenever I receive an email or get a little note that, you know, that I want to hang on to, I keep it there. Because I think for all of us, it's easy to lose sight of why we do what we do and the difference that we really can make. So keeping that perspective, it just really helped me to say, okay, it might be my 927th show, but how do I want to show up? Not for the 1,000 people, the strangers out there, but for that one person who might really have their heart touched tonight, who might create a memory that will last forever. And we have this opportunity in every moment, don't we? You never know when one kind word, maybe even a smile to a stranger, could change someone's whole life.
So just for a second, I want to step out of that interview because I want to emphasize this concept that Sandra shared about a perspective box. As leaders who are listening, as salespeople, as speakers, as performers, as peak performers, people who want to show up in a big way every day, which I assume that's you if you're listening to this podcast, how do you maintain that energy? How do you maintain that perspective? How do you get up every day and put your whole heart into it? I love what Sandra shared. And I think for each of us, we have to figure out our own version of what a perspective box is. What is it that centers you? What is it that gets you focused and engaged and ready to show up even when you don't want to? Because we all have that. I know as a professional speaker, I speak about 100 times a year, and there are times that There's other things going on in my head, other things going on in my life. There's times that I'm tired. There's times that I'm exhausted from travel. There's many weeks that I do a speech in a different city every single day. And so I basically speak it on a plane, and it becomes exhausting. So how do you show up when you don't feel like it? I hope that you take a minute to think about what your perspective box is and what you can put in place in your life to make sure that you can show up for your audience. And when I say your audience, that could be your people, that could be your students, that could be your actual audience, that could be the prospects that you're meeting with. But how do you show up for them and give them your absolute best? Okay, back to the interview.
I love that concept. I think keeping in perspective who we are, why we do what we do. It's a hard thing to do, but sometimes when we step back and look at the impact that makes, I mean, for everybody in here, tonight's a kind of a perspective box, isn't it?
Yeah.
You kind of step back and reassess what's important and what kind of person you want to be, and that's awesome. Yeah. So you played the role of a lifetime with really... I mean, probably the most famous show, you know, when you think about, everybody knows Phantom.
Yeah.
What did you learn in the process?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, there was one moment in the show that was my favorite moment to play. And it's a moment at the end of the show when my character looks at the Phantom without his mask, and she embraces him. She has initially run away when she saw him without his mask, but it's really the journey for her to be able to see what she once feared and embrace it. And she offers him unconditional love in that moment, and it always made me tear up because, you know, I would just look at his face and hold his face in my hands and just imagine love pouring through my eyes into him so that he could receive it. And, you know, she kisses him in that moment and he is immediately transformed. And that's the moment when there's not a dry eye in the house, because the audience feels the impact of what it is that I think really is the key to the success of that show. You know, Phantom is the most lucrative entertainment enterprise of all time. Longest running Broadway show in history. It's been seen by hundreds of millions of people around the world. And I wondered, you know, why is it that that show is such a phenomenon? And of course it's the music, of course it's the spectacle, it's beautiful visually. But it has to be something more than that, right? And I really do think it's about that universal thing that we all face, that is that belief we all carry. And it's why we sometimes get in our own way. That belief that there's something about us that is fundamentally flawed, that if I really allow myself to be seen, I will be rejected. And when she looks at him without his mask and kisses him, that moment of transformation is felt by everybody in the room. But the challenge for us is usually, you know, it's easy to see other people and love them despite their flaws, but it's when we see the person in the mirror without the mask that we tend to be so hard on ourselves. So that was the lesson that I carried with me, is how can I learn to accept the flaws that I see in myself and forgive myself when I make mistakes and really learn to love who we are without the mask.
That's beautiful. Give her a hand. I think that's such an amazing lesson. So Sandra, I think I could sit here all night and just hear more of your story, but I'm pretty sure somebody out there would like to hear you sing. Isn't there anybody that would like to hear her sing?
Thank you.
One quick note, as she does sing, please no videos of her singing. But I'm going to turn it over to you to be able to share your amazing talents. Ladies and gentlemen, Sandra Joseph.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Ty. Thank you. I have to brag on Ty Bennett for a second. So we met last year at an event, and I was going to be singing and speaking later that evening, but I found out who the speaker was in the daytime. I actually texted one of the people in charge. I was like, I'm up in my hotel room in my pajamas, not planning on going down for the morning session. I said, who's the speaker? And she said, oh, it's this guy named Ty Bennett. I was like, I love him. I know him. I had followed Ty online and bought one of his programs. What was it called? The Facts Tell, Stories Sell. Is that right? His DVD. So I had been at home in New York watching him on my TV, watching his DVDs. And I had transitioned from Broadway to, I started being invited to share my story, which was a great unexpected blessing. But I thought, you know, I should learn how to tell my story and how to share with people in a way that makes it meaningful to them. And I wanted to find who were the people that were doing that at a really high level and in a way that felt like they really were coming from a place of integrity and not ego. And I found Ty somehow online. So I think it's no coincidence that we met. I went down to watch him speak and then went up to him like a fangirl after. And I said, I've been checking you out online. I just love what you're doing and the way you're doing it. So, and because of that chance meeting, I get to be here with all of you tonight, which is just a tremendous gift. I've been looking forward to this for a really long time. So I thought I would share a few of my favorite songs from that little skit I was a part of, beginning with the song I auditioned with. I'm not going to do this, and I'm not going to do that, but I am going to show you some little video that will take you down memory lane, and you'll see me in my younger days. So here we go to the stage of the Majestic Theater.
Me fondly when we've said goodbye. Remember me every so often. Promise me you'll try. On that day, that not so distant day, when you're far away and free, if you ever find a moment, spare a thought for me.
Today's superstar story was Sandra Joseph. I love her story. I'm so glad that you got a chance to hear her story. The first time I heard her story, it was so entertaining to me, but so inspiring. Sandra reached the pinnacle of all pinnacles in her profession. I mean, Christine Daae in Phantom on Broadway is the top of the top. And for me, as I listened to her story the very first time, and as I've heard it over and over again, I step back and think about what potential do I have that's unreached? What do I need to be going after? And part of why I chose to do these segments on these superstar stories is because these stories hopefully inspire you to recognize the potential that you have, to inspire you to go after something bigger. Because in the process of doing that, you're going to stretch, you're going to grow, you're going to become a better person. And so I hope that this leaves you with some new ideas, with some new energy, and with something that you want to pursue. Go out there and write your own story. Thank you for listening to the Relevant Leadership Podcast. My name is Ty Bennett. I want to thank Tyler McCullough for producing this episode. Again, if you found this inspiring, if you gained some value from this, please subscribe, share this with your friends, go on and give us a review. All of that is very appreciated. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.